through Thursday evening. This afternoon, mostly sunny with a high of 90, the wind light and from the east. Tonight, mostly clear with a low of 65 and a light east wind. Tomorrow, mostly sunny and warmer, the high 90. The wind will be light and out of the southeast. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a low of 72 and a light southeast wind. Sunday, the excessive heat watch goes into effect Sunday morning. It will be mostly sunny, hot, and humid. Look for a high in the low 90s with heat index readings from 100 to 105 degrees. The wind light and from the south. Sunday night through Thursday, mostly clear with lows in the mid-70s and highs in the mid-90s. Heat index readings will range from 105 to 110 degrees. At noon Central Time, temperatures across Illinois and Indiana were in the 80s. Most locations reported a sunny sky. At Rockford, 84, 83 at O'Hare, Bloomington, and Mattoon, 86 at Carbondale. South Bend reported 82 degrees at the top of the hour. It was 85 at Lafayette. Indianapolis reported 84, and Terre Haute had a temperature of 83. Willard Airport had a temperature of 83 at the top of the hour. The sky, sunny. The dew point, 64. The relative humidity, 52%. The wind out of the east at 7. The barometric pressure, 30 even and steady. And at 12:39, 86 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. A major change for Illinois' youth prisons is on hold. Governor Pat Quinn last year pushed to merge the Department of Juvenile Justice into the Department of Children and Family Services. The governor said it would lead to more treatment for incarcerated youth, though some lawmakers and a public employee union resisted the move. And like many big ideas, the merger fell by the wayside. But there does appear to be change, however modest, coming to the state's youth prison system. Sam Hudzik reports.
It was only 5 years ago that the Illinois Department of Juvenile Justice separated from the adult prison system and became its own agency. But it floundered, crumbling unclean and unsafe facilities, few activities for the roughly 1,200 incarcerated kids. Not all got a full day of school, and next to no job training was offered. More than half the youth released ended up getting in trouble and being sent back. So last year, Governor Pat Quinn proposed merging the Department of Juvenile Justice with DCFS, a larger agency that runs the foster care system.
Okay, I think that it was an idea, and somebody came up with it, and it's like, oh, why don't we do this?
The merger plan did not impress State Representative Karen Yarbrough, a Maywood Democrat who at the time chaired the committee that oversaw funding for youth prisons.
DCFS is a huge agency, and I just figured these kids would get lost. We just had taken these kids out of a big agency, Department of Corrections. So to throw them back into another big agency was not my idea of the right thing to do.
Quinn, though, was determined. He issued an executive order directing state agencies to work together and come up with a merger plan that lawmakers could consider. But the timeline kept slipping from weeks to months to more months.
We're going to make this transition over the next 6 months.
In mid-July of last year, Quinn told reporters the department merger would happen by the end of 2010.
Certainly by year's end, there'll be all put together.
I says put on hold. You know, I'm not saying it's something that you never come back to, but right now this is our focus. And so we're not spending too much time right now talking about merger.
That's Arthur Bishop, the new juvenile justice director handpicked by Quinn a year ago. In an interview this week, Bishop acknowledged the merger idea between the youth prison system and DCFS was going nowhere.
As we went into the discussions around merger, we found that the collaborative relationships with other state agencies and other partners allowed us to accomplish a number of the things that we've accomplished thus far. And so the focus is on the youth. and the rehabilitation of the youth as opposed to what address DJJ sits in.
Specifically, the department is relying on DCFS to help train a new kind of employee called an aftercare specialist, basically a youth-focused parole officer. Until recently, when kids were released, they were all monitored by parole officers employed by the adult Department of Corrections, and minor violations landed many back in prison. But these aftercare specialists are supposed to meet the kids when they're first incarcerated, get to know their families, essentially help keep parolees out of trouble, save taxpayers from the cost of imprisoning them again, and keep the communities they're returning to safer.
It's not only to reduce recidivism, but to ensure that a youth are involved in pro-social and positive things in the community, such as education, vocation, and also in the appropriate services.
But the progress here is markedly slower than expected. Bishop originally hoped to have about 20 of these aftercare specialists working with kids in Cook County by now. He has just 5.
That's the hiring process. It's not unusual. You have a target, and you identify individuals that are either coming from other state agencies or coming from other professions, and then sometime, once they find out what the job calls for, they make their own individual decisions.
Bishop notes that an additional 15 are scheduled to begin training in August, though, like the last round, the final number could be much lower. And this aftercare program is only temporary, a 2-year grant using federal stimulus dollars. Governor Quinn's proposed budget this year included money to keep the program going and begin to expand it statewide, but the legislature did not fund that. In fact, the Juvenile Justice Department as a whole saw a $5 million cut from the last fiscal year. Working with less, though, is the name of the game in state government these days, and Bishop's efforts in his first year are earning cautiously positive marks from advocates like Elizabeth Clark with the Juvenile Justice Initiative.
All of this incredibly well-intentioned and a great deal of work. It is frustrating that given all of this, the conditions for the youth remain at the level that they are.
Concerns confirmed by a report last week by the John Howard Association, a prison watchdog group. It found problems at the St. Charles facility in recreational activities, maintenance and upkeep, safety and staff training, all things Bishop says he's working on. But the most challenging questions facing the Juvenile Justice Department are much broader. They involve local and labor union politics and are beyond the new director's immediate reach. How many of the 8 youth prisons around the state should be operating? How many staff should be working there? And how many kids should be incarcerated and for what offenses? Those remaining and unsettled issues aside, Elizabeth Clark contends that Governor Quinn's abandoned proposal to merge the Department of Juvenile Justice with DCFS was not a waste of time.
It certainly did propel a really necessary discussion about the overall focus of the agency, because juveniles are different. They need a treatment focus, and they really do need more of a child welfare focus rather than an adult punishment criminal focus.
Whether that focus translates to better conditions for incarcerated youth, fewer repeat criminals, and safer communities, that's going to take a lot longer than a year to know for sure. I'm Sam Hudzik.
I'm Celeste Quinn. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2 opens this weekend. The books and films have added some words to our vocabulary. For example, the phrase, 10 points to the Gryffindorf.
He's got the snitch! Harry Potter receives 150 points for catching the snitch!
Gryffindor wins!
As any wizard knows, they're playing Quidditch. NPR's Mary Louise Kelly talked about these Potterisms and more with Ben Zimmer. He runs the website Visual Thesaurus, which maps words and their relationships to each other. Mary Louise asked about the word muggle, noting it has won a place in the Oxford English Dictionary.
That's right. Muggle is in there. So it has the meaning within the Harry Potter universe of a person who does not have magical powers, but it's been extended to mean a person who lacks any particular skill. So different subcultures have used this word. So, for instance, computer hackers could describe non-hackers as muggles.
Okay, so Muggle, Quidditch, we just heard Snitch from the movie there. Also a lot of the names from the J.K. Rowling books, now movies, which have worked their way into our everyday language. There's one example I wanted to quote for you. This is in the news right now. Tina Brown, who we often hear from on this program, writing in the news about the current travails of Rupert Murdoch, and she says, and I'm quoting, "He could have been Dumbledore crossed with Harry Potter, but he's Voldemort and he's not vanquished yet." Ben Zimmer, translate for those non-Harry Potter fans out there.
Well, Dumbledore, of course, is the wizard that takes on that kind of a mentor role for Harry Potter. And so I suppose that means that he could have been wise and courageous, but instead he went over to the dark side, like Lord Voldemort, who's the archenemy of Harry Potter in the books and films.
"He who must not be named did great things. Terrible. But great."
He who must not be named.
Right. Since the wizards and witches are afraid of summoning him, that's what they call him. And that comes in handy, too, if you want to talk about someone unseemly or someone whose name you don't want to get into the conversation. In fact, I know a woman who refers to her ex-husband as "he who must not be named." And her sisters sometimes just call him Voldemort, you know.
I guess some of the other characters in the book have also worked their way into our conversations. You could refer to a really mean teacher, for example, as a Snape.
Sure. What,
who else?
Hermione, she's, you know, a bright young overachiever, sometimes trying a little too hard. So you could call someone a Hermione. You could use Draco to refer to an evil bully. They're such evocative names that Rowling has come up with, so they're fun to say.
I guess the question is whether all these Potterisms will stand the test of time. Are we still going to be talking about bad guys as Voldemort 10 years from now?
I think so, because so many children have grown up with the books and with the films. It's become this formative experience in becoming a literate person. And so I think that it has become entrenched for that generation, so they'll continue to use it, perhaps not as frequently, but certainly terms like Muggle I would expect to stand the test of time.
Ben Zimmer. He is the webmaster for Visual Thesaurus. He spoke with NPR's Mary Louise Kelly about Potterisms. The last film in the Harry Potter series, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2, opens this weekend.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 15th of July, 2011. It was on this day, 1838, Ralph Waldo Emerson delivered his Divinity School address at Harvard to about 100 people in the audience, including 6 of the 7 graduates of Harvard Divinity School and faculty and ministers and former graduates. Emerson had graduated from Harvard Divinity 12 years before, and he'd been chosen as speaker by the graduating students. He got up and gave his speech, in which he denounced the state of Christianity, saying that Christianity had divorced itself from the exploration of the moral nature of man and the sublime. The older faculty